You have New Year's goals and need energy to tackle them. So, I'd like to introduce you to a different way to start your day with Super Beats Heart Chews. Super Beats Heart Chews are a tasty treat that gives you the energy that you need and are good for you. No more afternoon coffees, energy drinks, or candy for a quick pick-me-up. Add two delicious plant-based Super Beats Heart Chews to your morning routine and promote heart-healthy energy for your day without a caffeine crash. Super Beats Heart Chews' unique, clinically researched grapeseed extract promotes heart-healthy energy and normal blood pressure as part of a healthy lifestyle. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats Heart Chews has been clinically shown to be two times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Super Beats Heart Chews are a tasty treat that gives you the energy that you need and are good for you. Now for my listeners only, you can get up to 45% off plus free shipping at danasbeats.com. This is their best offer available anywhere. That's danasbeats.com.
The Supreme Court's decision on the OSHA mandate essentially means that in this pandemic, it is up to individual employers to determine whether their workplaces will be safe for employees and whether their businesses will be safe for consumers. So President Biden, you'll see this in his statement, will be calling on and will continue to call on businesses to immediately join those who have already stepped up, including one-third of Fortune 100 companies, to institute vaccination requirements to protect their workers, customers, and communities.
Oh, they're mad. This has been a really bad week for Joe Biden. It's been a really, really bad year. Life?
Yeah. Months.
Months? Life? Forever?
Yeah, life is probably
just yeah, I get it. Yeah, I don't know. Welcome to the show. It's Friday, guys. We made it. Woo! It's Friday. So I want to break this down for you, including a couple of things. We're going to get into the latest with filibuster stuff, because you know Democrats, they use that Jim Crow filibuster just to block sanctions. They're trying to block sanctions against Russia with Nord Stream 2. It's a Ted Cruz bill. So we're going to talk about that. Yeah, I know they used it. They legit used it yesterday. It's okay. I mean, you know, up is down. Doesn't matter. No consistency with these people. But we'll talk about some foreign policy stuff. But just to crack down on, I wrote about this twice. So you got it. If you sign to my email, you get my newsletter, chapter and verse, the subscription, then you got my initial breakdown. You got some additional thoughts as well, because I want to make sure that we're discussing this on air, obviously. So this, there's two separate cases, and I wanted to explain this because I'm a little disappointed. And the left obviously is going crazy. They're livid. You should see some of the hot takes I've collected for you. I'm going to share those shortly. They are livid though over this ruling, over both of the decisions in both of these cases. And we're going to talk about the other one as it relates to the CMS case, and that's the Medicare, Medicaid, health facilities, etc. We'll talk about that here in depth. But the first case, because it's kind of a mixed bag on these decisions, right? So you had the OSHA mandate. Well, it was Biden's vaccine mandate for large employers. It was the OSHA and CMS mandates. So the OSHA mandate, this was the mandate for businesses that have, 100 or more employees. You have to get the vaccine. That's what he was mandating. And the takeaway, and I think, and I shared with you, because I read both of the opinions, and they do what they call the per curiam opinion. And that's just, you know, where it's not. It's just the court as a whole. There's, you know, it's like an editorial byline at a newspaper for the editorial board. So the opinions of both the OSHA and CMS mandates, I read both of these last night. They're not difficult reads. This is the thing. I hate these people who are like, well, unless you're a certified attorney, you can't read these. If you are arguing that only people who go to Ivy League are able to not only participate in government and talk about their government, you're not only an elitist snob, you're a fake intellectual, you overpaid for an overpriced mishmash college education, and you are also antithetical, as your belief is antithetical to the entirety of the United States, because it is by, for, and of the people. So end of story. They're actually really easy reads because a lot of people don't want to read, do the deep dive on it because they're like, I don't know. It's not, honestly, they're really easy reads. So let's start with the OSHA thing. This was the 6-3 vote against that mandate. So this was for stopping the mandate. Now, here's why I'm disappointed. Let me just get this out of the way. And then I'm going to break down the key. There's one paragraph and it's all you need to understand about this case. Why I'm disappointed about this. And the more I think about it and mull it over, the madder I make myself. Why in the world can the lawyers arguing for the plaintiffs or the petitioners in this case, why can't they just say, you know what? This is unconstitutional. There's no statutory authority at all whatsoever that allows the government to expand itself like this and to use this, the coronavirus, as leverage to expand oversight in private businesses. Why in the... It was so tepid. I was reading the transcript of the remarks and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'd have kicked you in the beans for this. I would have been up there setting fire in front of the bench being like, this is what I think of the... that's me. You know, I'm like, freedom, Braveheart style. I just don't understand why they failed to prioritize in their arguments. I'm not saying that they didn't mention it, but don't you think that that's kind of the tip of the arrow? Like, why didn't they prioritize and give a strong, very vociferously in your face, super strong argument about absolute unconstitutional overreach? Why wasn't there a defense of separation of powers? Why wasn't there a defense for individual liberty in the face of large federal government expansion? The focus of their argument seemed to rest on this one-size-fits-all regulatory expansion. And I'm not saying that that is a bad argument or an illogical argument. What I'm saying, because it's correct, what I'm saying is that the unconstitutional federal overreach, the total lack of statutory authority, that seems to be the kind of the focus here. But I kind of feel, too, and this is me just speculating, it almost seems like that the attorneys were nervous to risk this full-throat defense because they knew that at least with this lesser argument, it's an open and closed case. Maybe if we push it to this degree, we might upset the apple cart. That's kind of that's me speculating, but that's sort of, you know, they don't want perfect to be the enemy of good, right? I guess, but then at the same time, yes, we do have a victory on this. And while I don't want perfect to be the enemy of good, you know, there's a weakness in arguing against expanded government here. And that was disappointing to me. The second thing, and this is what I want to get to, the one takeaway paragraph that you need from this opinion, and it was a 6-3 vote against, like I said, 6-3. I want to just share this graph with you. I'm going to get all the references to previous statutes out of the way. This is like the graph that you need to know. They write in this opinion, quote, the question is then whether the act plainly authorizes the secretary's mandate. It doesn't. It empowers the secretary to set workplace safety standards, not broad public health measures. And they say that the provisions typically speak to hazards that employees face at work, and no provision of the act addresses public health more generally, which falls outside of OSHA's sphere of expertise. So that was obvious. I mean, OSHA is about safety in the workplace, and this mandate exceeds it. Furthermore, think about this. This virus, especially when you look at the Omicron variant, right? Mild, considered so mild, there's only 10 fatalities in the entire world, at least last counted. There's only 10 fatalities in the entire world, and they're considering it to be incredibly mild, that the flu is more lethal and virulent than the Omicron strain. So the virus really isn't any more of a threat to anybody in the workplace than the flu, than strep throat, the common cold, think about any kind of upper respiratory, etc. Where is the line drawn if we start singling out individual viruses as justification to expand government power? That is what the court actually addressed. And that's what they were hitting on in that brief graph. Also, they were hitting on at least the first part of that argument. So I think that's a huge takeaway with this. Now, the other case that related to vaccine mandates, and there was an expedited hearing of this because they were going back between Fifth Circuit, Sixth Circuit, and there were going to be precedents set. Other things were coming up, and we're going to talk to later on, Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, in a quick note, as I sent out in the subscription. Now, I have previously endorsed him in his Senate race. Now, I've said before, and I told him when I did this, I said, I'm not going to have you on unless you make news. So you can choose if you want me to endorse you or if you want to come on air, because I rarely endorse people, and I'm very just upfront about it because I am not friends with anybody. So I am always disinclined to invite people on air unless there is unavoidable news in which they are directly involved and can speak to. Now, this case actually is that circumstance because Missouri AG Eric Schmidt was pretty much the lead in that coalition of 10 states as it relates to the CMS mandate. So this is what he was working on. So we're going to have him on to talk about this because my initial takeaway from that is that because government expanded its power with regard to Medicare and Medicaid, and the CMS mandate was that any health facility that is getting Medicare, Medicaid funding, federal funding, taxpayer dollars, that it comes down to the Benjamins. That the premise of this decision is essentially the government can set restrictions on the money that it gives. So if it's going to give you taxpayer money, there are certain conditions that go along with it. And that's the crux of this case. But to me, it almost seems that those two premises from the OSHA case and the CMS case kind of cancel each other out, that because the variable of taxpayer dollars is involved, that somehow invalidates. I don't know. We're going to talk to Eric Schmidt about this coming up. So that's the mixed bag on this with the ruling. Now, Kavanaugh joined the liberal justices on upholding the CMS mandate. So that's something to note. And of course, John Roberts, who is, I think, Bush's biggest disappointment, just like Sandra Day O'Connor was Reagan's. Now, Joe Biden, as you heard in this audio soundbite, Jen Psaki addressing it, he's essentially telling states to ignore the Supreme Court and impose these mandates anyway. Do you remember especially after Obamacare and after that Supreme Court fight? Do you remember how the left was like, well, it's a settled law now. Settled law. Settled law. There it is. That's just how it is. But wait, do they like it now or no? So they like the Supreme Court stuff again. I'm just going to establish this because this is going to go against them at some point. So he's telling states, do the right thing. This would have affected, what, a third of businesses? 80 million workers would have been affected by the private rule? Oh, yeah. So the healthcare workers, that stayed in a 5-4 decision. This was 6-3 for OSHA, 5-4 for the CMS mandate. So he's telling them, do the right thing. You go ahead and do this anyway. But you can't. That's it. The end. It's done. I tell you what. It was, they're mad. The left is mad over the private rule. Now, here's something else to look at that I've got a couple of other headlines, too. So we're going to get into some of this other stuff as it relates to foreign policy with Russia, etc., because now Poland's like, guys, Europe's on the brink of the Third World War. Just FYI, we're going to talk about this. We're also going to get into Democrats being so mad about the filibuster because it's Jim Crow. But they were not mad enough to actually use the filibuster yesterday when filibustering Ted Cruz's Nord Stream sanctions bill. You know, because it was Jim Crow. We're going to talk about that as well. We got a lot of stuff to get into, so you don't want to miss. Ooh, and then later on, mass formation psychosis. The guy behind this theory, he's being so attacked online. Dr. Matthias Desmet. This is fascinating, and we're going to explore how giant segments of people can be just, you know, persuaded to relinquish their rights without a shot fired.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
So why even go? Team USA is advising athletes that are heading to the Beijing Olympics to leave their phones at home. They're saying you might want to get a burner phone so you can avoid, as a precaution, so you can avoid against avoid any possible surveillance. If you have to get a burner phone to go and compete in China because you're afraid of being spied on by, you know, the Wu flu origin, then maybe we should reconsider going to this dog and pony Victorian freak show. For the love, this is I'm not. Why would I wouldn't go if I was the best athlete in the world and I knew I was going to get 5,000 medals? There's no way I'd go to this because they're because you know well, China is you know what? That's right. Goodness. This town, for some reason, requires residents to remove their appendix to live there. This is weird, dude. So they said that this one American town requires prospective residents to literally remove their appendix. It's Villas Las Estrellas. It's Las Estrellas. It's one of two civilian settlements on the frozen continent where people can reside for years instead of weeks or months, and an appendectomy is required. It's in Chile. It's on King George Island, and they have about 100 inhabitants, and it's a pretty Spartan settlement, and everything looks like it's a trailer and a giant canvas tent. And the preemptive extraction, they said that the nearest hospital is over 625 miles away. So if you get appendicitis, you have to have immediate surgery. That you're not going to happen. And by the way, people are also told to not get pregnant. I don't think I would want to go here. Because, like, what if I want some tacos? I don't think they have those. I mean, to say nothing of the appendicitis. I'm not even concerned about that. Come on. The GOP finally finds its brass on dealing with the idiotic presidential debate commission. The RNC says they're keeping the GOP presidential candidates from participating in debates sponsored by this commission because the commission is ridiculous. That's why. And it's incredibly biased. Former Miss Universe Olivia Culpo is calling out American Airlines. She was wearing biker shorts and a sports bra, and they said they wouldn't let her board because it was inappropriate and she had a fit about it. It's because it's underwear. Jeebus, don't dress like a skank and maybe you won't have a problem. Look, you can be pretty and also realize that bras and panties are undergarments. Stick with us. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. A privately owned family company that began making one-of-a-kind American-made firearms in 1995. In 1999, Kel-Tec launched their brand on the scene by forever redefining the concealed carry handgun. And from that point on, Kel-Tec continues to innovate and create never-before-seen firearms, pistols, rifles, and shotguns alike, never copying firearms, always innovating new ones. Kel-Tec believes in respect, family, the right to bear arms, and in the love we all have for our great country. They do things right. All Kel-Tec firearms are proudly made right here in America in a true family culture that embraces every employee and where people are genuinely happy to come to work. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. Find out more about Kel-Tec firearms by visiting KelTecWeapons.com for a deeper dive on all aspects of their innovative firearms. That's KelTecWeapons.com to learn more about my friends at Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec, game-changing innovation and performance.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
So what's the point of now sending N95 or KN95 masks out to Americans if a lot of those masks are just single daily use? Like somebody wears it once, then what?
Masks save lives, I think, is the important thing here. And we want to make sure that everybody has the tools and resources that they need in order to protect themselves and their families.
Okay, but how? What's the data? Where's your data on that? I mean, I've got a lot of data to the contrary. That was Deucey time on the mask thing. Welcome back to the show. Happy Friday. Dana Lash here with you. N95 and KN95, I was looking at the difference between them because they have different standards for those. And the N95, that's like the gold standard. And the KN95, which is, their KN95 is approved. Only KN95 is approved for medical setting usage. So N95s are the U.S. standard. KN95s, that's the Chinese standard, which we don't care about. And apparently, like, the N90, so, like, that's the KN95, that's the medical grade, whatever. N95s, basically, here's the thing. They're better than this stupid cloth thing you're wearing on your face. Guys, I know this is probably not very charitable of me, but there's a reason that we have all been blessed with use of ridicule. I saw someone wearing a Fendi face mask. Designer, It's just a designer pattern. Basically, you're advertising a designer's logo on your face for free because you're a moron. And I have seen this in the wild. You know that? Dude, I've straight up seen it like in the wild. And I just think if you are spending, and I wanted to know how much those were. Can you believe that? Oh my gosh, I was like $195. There's like some amazing counterfeit opportunities here. I'm not encouraging this at all. I'm just saying if you're stupid enough to spend that kind of money on it, you're stupid enough to also get fleeced. You spend your money however you want to, but we can make fun of it. I was amazed at this. They don't do anything. It is designer grade virtue signaling. That's all it is. The cloth don't do anything. Not at all. And these are only a little bit better. They did a study on the virus particles. I don't want to relitigate it because we've talked about it so many times. I feel like I keep doing the same segment. Point being is that what evidence are you basing this on? Doesn't science follow hard data? You ask a question and then scientific theory fits the answer, fits the conclusion to the facts, not vice versa. I told you, remember the first email that I sent to you at the start of this year with PrEP? I said, one of the things you're going to need to watch is they're going to be making these kids, making everybody wear these things. And now it's going to be the big N95 push. They gave all these N95 masks to congressional members and they were all made in China. And to add insult to injury, they literally had made in China in huge letters, like steam stamped into the side of the cloth where it was super visible from like a mile away on somebody's face. I'm just saying it's silly to me. I find it silly. It feels like we're perhaps maybe closer to closer to herd immunity than we ever had been before. The whole thing is just bizarre though. Now here's the thing, in Minneapolis, kids between the ages of 2 and 5 have to show a negative COVID lab test to enter a restaurant. Yeah. Kids too young to be vaccinated are not exempt. Can't be an at-home test. You got to go to a lab.
What?
These people are morons. This is the stupidest. Show us your papers. Every other effort at this has failed. All these businesses are going to be hurt by these government policies. I like what some commenter said. They said, you'll also need 6 hairs from a lab certified unicorn and a handwritten letter from the Queen of England. Or what about, new study suggests a boot stamping on a human face forever may help prevent the spread of coronavirus. So if you're fully vaccinated, why are you worried about an unvaxxed baby? Because the unvaxxed baby can't even actually physically, anatomically carry the virus as a reservoir due to physical maturation. Science, how does it work? I mean, that's so, kids who have no symptoms and who are not sick, are you going to go spend that money to go get tested so you can go get some infinite breadsticks at Olive Garden? For real, is that what you're going to do? Sorry, kids, we got to go to the lab and spend a buttload of money to get y'all tested before we can go and have infinite stick at Olive Garden. Really? When you're here, you're here. Olive Garden. By the way, vaccinated people can still get and transmit the virus. So why are we doing this? The transmission of the virus is only okay if you're vaccinated. I love the theory that your vaccination only works if someone else is also vaccinated, yet you could both can transmit it to each other. And also if you both wear completely worthless and useless face panties. It's like how people think that a piece of cloth over your gun makes that gun safer. Right? It's like a shroud. Thou must put the holy shroud on thy face to prevent the ghost germs from coming out. This is so ridiculous. First off, can I just be real? I'm sure Minneapolis is lovely. I don't like super cold places. I am not a cold kind of person. I don't like being in the cold. I don't like snow. I don't find snow activities fun because you have to put on a bunch of clunky stuff and you feel like Ralphie's little brother from A Christmas Story And anything where you have to take off multiple layers to use the restroom is ridiculous, in my opinion. And you can't hardly move, and it's not fun. I hate snow to death. Hate it. And I don't like cold places. So I'm just saying, Minneapolis is kind of cold, right? So why are you doing this to people? Why? Isn't this like the sad time of year, the seasonal something disorder? Isn't that what that is?
Yeah, seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah, it's like where people are just sad. It's after Christmas. You have Valentine's Day, which just is dumb. And so it's just sad.
I think scientifically, yes. Monday is the saddest day of the year.
That's what it
says on the internet. And they're always right.
The internet is completely right. Believe everything you read on it, in fact. So now people have got the sads. They're in Minneapolis where it's cold. They can't even go to a restaurant unless they get there. They're totally not able to transmit the virus unvaccinated baby vaccinated or tested, rather. You have to show a negative test to come and eat at Cece's Pizza. You got to go get your kids vaccinated before you can come into the Golden Corral. Look, I'm going to tell you something. I don't do buffets. Sidebar. The last time I was at a buffet, I legit saw some kids stick their finger in it after they were. I'm not kidding you. It sounds like a made up story. Hands to sky. It's not. It was the chocolate fountain. I'm like, I can never do this again. I don't like food that's been around other people and I haven't seen what they've been doing around it. Just like I won't eat food out of a kitchen I haven't seen. I don't eat buffets. Dana doesn't do buffets. I have rules about food. I don't share it. I don't eat food from a kitchen I haven't seen. And I don't do buffets because it's weird, right? You got to have that stuff covered and sealed if it's in a public setting. I'm just weird about it. That's why, like, if you go to places where they got sandwiches or pasta, hell no. Give me some chips. I don't even eat. I'm not even a big chip eater, but I'm going to do that before. Because germs, right? Isn't that what we're all talking about? We're all worried about germs?
Yeah.
Jeez. This is just stupid. So yeah, what's going to happen with restaurants? This is the craziest thing ever. And you can't do the at-home test. PCR test will show that you're positive for like 3 months.
Let's say this weekend we have a reservation in D.C. to go watch football. And all of my friends have to bring their vax passes. We're supposed to get snow and we've all already had it. So it's like, what are we doing here?
That's dumb. I'd rather stay home and drink better liquor cheaper. And watch the game.
I'm with you.
I am a hobbit. Like, you have to coax me out of my house with something, right? You either have to put, like, I'm like E.T., but instead of Reese's Pieces, just put, like, beef tips out and lure me out of my hobbit hole. Because I think I've just grown, the older I get, the more cantankerous I get. And I'm just like, I'm not going to go where some mixologist is going to have like some, I'm just not going to do it. And your food better be fantastic or it better be a really good event. And I'm very Sebastian Maniscalco about going to people's houses. He did this whole bit about how him and his wife went to a friend's house and everybody had to take off their shoes. And he said he was standing there with grown ass men who were all in their sock or bare feet. And it was weird. I agree with you. So I just would rather avoid the hassle, stay home, and I can play on my Xbox, and I can do what I want to do and not be bothered, right? And just do what I want to do and be like Greg Fokker, I'm not giving up my bag. So this, it just aggravates me. It just completely aggravates me with this stuff. And now the mask thing. It's so dumb. I was at my doctor's office, just like, you know, your annual well visit yesterday. And they're like, oh, you got to wear your masks. But I noticed that everybody touches the same pins. You have to touch a pin. You got to touch the same buttons to pay. You got to do all this stuff. But make sure you wear that face panty that does not a damn thing. But go ahead and touch everything else, you know. Get your hands all over it. Pick your nose and then touch the buttons. Like, where's the consistency? If I'm forced to, when I go into a doctor's office, wear a face mask, I will not pin it around my nose. I will make it. Fit on my face as stupidly as possible. I make sure it's crooked and everything. I am a brat about it. And then they just look at me. And you can tell by the look whether they're like, we get it. Or whether they're, you know, a mask Nazi. You can tell. Somebody goes, yes, Minneapolis is a hellhole. This is our listener, Polygirl, who I'm pretty sure she probably is in Minneapolis. She's like, yes, it's horrible. It is. But hey, make sure you get it, go and spend the money to get a PCR test that's going to show that you're positive for up to 3 months. So you can go and have Olive Garden. Mm-mm-mm. Is there a restaurant there worth going through that hassle for? There is not a restaurant worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
The only restaurant that I would maybe even consider it for, but not really. I lied. I wouldn't even. But I would even allow the thought to pop in my head is either Bob's Steakhouse in Dallas or Burns in Tampa, Florida. And only because Burns is weird and you have dessert in a wine barrel. Like you literally sit in it. That's the only thing. And I once saw drunk Debbie Wasserman Schultz outside. Wasted. Wasted. Complete. Barely knew her name. She was always nice to me. But I mean, I could have like, if I would have just, you know, blown in her general direction, she would have tipped over. But that was really funny. We got a lot more to get into, folks. You don't want to miss any part of the show today because coming up, we're going to infuriate the fascists because I'm bringing on this very smart professor and he checks all the boxes of things that progressives would like, right? He's European. He's a professor. He's ingrained in academia. These are all things that progressives celebrate, except when the person that checks those boxes disagrees with them. He's a very interesting combination of studies. He studies clinical psychiatry. He's an expert in clinical psychiatry, but he also is a statistician. It's very odd, but he has been talking a lot about mass formation psychosis. And in fact, when Dr. Robert Malone was on the program a few weeks ago with us, he had referenced Dr. Matthias Desmet. Professor Matthias Desmet. He had referenced Professor Desmet and mass formation psychosis, which really reminded me of the elective on mass hysteria that I had in school. And so I began reading a lot about it, and he's going to be joining us to talk about mass formation psychosis in the context of this virus and pandemic and why it seems that so many people who you viewed earlier as being, you know, reasonably reasoned, why so many people are just like so eager to relinquish their rights and bodily autonomy over feelings, not facts. So we're going to talk with him about all of that. You don't want to miss. Friends, we're on the brink of an economic crisis, really. I mean, thanks to the economic policies and the jobless numbers, that everything's been abysmal. Inflation is starting to increase. We're seeing supply chain disruptions. It's kind of crazy. Instead of following the former president's pro-business agenda that had the economy booming, now the new administration wants to tax corporations, tax small businesses, pass trillion-dollar bills that we can't pay for. You need to take proactive steps to protect your wealth and your retirement by investing in gold and precious metals, and legacy precious metals can help. Washington keeps printing money and it devalues your dollar. Gold offers you a hedge against inflation. As the dollar gets weaker, gold gets stronger. So the folks at Legacy Precious Metals are the gold standard when it comes to investing in precious metals. They have a team of experts who can counsel you on the best options for you and your family. Don't leave your retirement to chance. Call Legacy Precious Metals at 866-580-2088 or visit them online to download their free investor's guide that's full of all kinds of useful information at legacypminvestments.com. Visit Legacy, letter P, letter M, investments.com.
Red meat, black coffee, truth telling. The Dana Show.
And but it's about one third of Americans report they don't wear a mask at all. As I've said in the last 2 years, please wear a mask. If you're in a, you know, I think it's part of your patriotic duty. It's not that comfortable. It's a pain in the neck. But I've taken every action I can as president. Require people to wear masks in federal buildings and on airplanes.
So, no, it's not. If it worked, even then, if it didn't, you don't. You can sit here and try to and do these emotional appeals all day long, like the president did. But it's not patriotic. You got to do your patriotic duty to wear something that doesn't actually filter out the particle that's too small to get filtered out by the mesh in the mask. Got to wear it. It's patriotic. Don't question us. Be controlled. It's patriotic. Bend the knee. It's patriotic. Give up your rights. It's patriotic. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash. This stupid, stupid article. I can't get over this article. It says, wearing a face mask makes you more attractive, says a study that was obviously done by ugly people. A new study has found wearing a face mask makes you appear more attractive. Cardiff University asked 43, a whole whopping 43 women, to rank men's faces with different items covering them. The study found that men with blue facial masks, medical masks, were the most attractive. Maybe if someone's ugly and they cover up their ugly snaggletooth face, then they're nicer looking. If you got a poop tooth, you cover your face. You know what that is, Kane? That's when you have one larger tooth that is slightly more discolored than the rest.
A little darker.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. If you hide usually what is someone's worst attributes, their nose and their, you know, their mouth and teeth and that, then that makes them better looking? Really? Golly. What is it? Someone made that, a listener said, did putting a bag on someone's head to make them look better? It used to be a joke and now it's real. Oh my gosh. If you hide your face and you're ugly, then you become more attractive. Oh, someone paid for this. Someone was like, let's do this study and spend money on it. That sounds like a great idea. 43 women. Dude, tell you what. And it's interesting that they just did dudes and that they didn't do women. Find that interesting. All right. We have more to come because in our next hour, Professor Matthias Desmond on MASH, mass formation psychosis. We're going to talk about this coming up and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. Don't go anywhere.
But as long as we have tens of millions of people who will not get vaccinated, we're going to have full hospitals and needless deaths. So the single most important thing to determine your outcome in this pandemic is getting vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, join the nearly 210 million American people who are vaccinated. If you are vaccinated, join the nearly 80 million Americans who have gotten the booster shot.
So you're telling me that it makes it to where you can't transmit it? No, that doesn't. Oh, so you can transmit it. Yes, but it makes the transmission less bad. Makes this, but it doesn't, though. I mean, you could say statistically, perhaps, or even anecdotally. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash with you. Find me on Substack, Chapter and Verse, which you can access at danalash.com at the top. So make sure you look at all that because I send stuff out every single day. All kinds of good info. Coming up, we have Professor Matthias Desmond on mass formation psychosis. Let's see if we can get this video pulled off of Facebook, too. I always say good morning to everyone except the fascist knobs at Facebook. They pulled my Dr. Robert Malone interview off two times. And you guys know me. You listen to me. I don't, you know, I'm not like a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist. My worst attribute is I'm a smartass. Maybe occasionally mean in good fun. But I mean, there's several things. There's a couple of areas where I don't think it should be politicized. Politics should not touch them. And that's science and medicine, because that's entirely fact based. And I'm like you. I just want answers. And our government won't give them because Tony Fauci's too busy posing for Vanity Fair. So I don't know. So the mask thing, which is not at all. They're really trying to push this. I told you this was going to happen. I said they're going to really, really push the whole mask thing, especially the N95s. They're going to push it, even though there isn't, I don't know what data they're basing this off of, because there's no available, every study, even the CDC said that they don't work. So why are we not reconciling all the talking points that we're hearing from these bureaucrats and these politicians and then the actual evidence from the CDC and the state that they, and the statements previously that the CDC had said, or a million other studies? You can't ask questions about inconsistencies because that's unpatriotic. That's mass formation psychosis, which is like mass hysteria. It is. A Quebec judge suspended an unvaccinated father's visitation rights with their kids. I'm sorry, but Quebec's government sounds like a bunch of D-bags. I'm not sorry. They sound like a bunch of D-bags. I'm not sorry. Why would I be sorry for what they're doing? It's unfortunate for them. A Quebec father has temporarily lost visitation rights with his child because he is not vaccinated. Superior Court Justice Sebastian Villancourt ruled that the order was given to protect the 12-year-old child, who is double-vaxxed, a bistad, given his father's status So the kid's vaccinated, but his vaccination doesn't work because the dad's not vaccinated? You morons. Is that the correct? The dad said, yes, I'm not vaccinated. He's not a conspiracy theorist. He's a healthy dude. He's just healthy. He did his own risk assessment. And Quebec's government decided to get involved. Can you imagine? This is not based on science. It is not at all based on science. Now, did you hear what Fauci had said the other day? Which you didn't, because you probably don't listen to him. I do, just in case he says something crazy, which is usually everything. He did a fireside chat with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Why? Why are you working with a policy org, and that makes zero sense? But he did say at one point, the quote that he said was this. This is his direct quote. Omicron, with its extraordinary, unprecedented degree of efficacy of transmissibility, will ultimately find just about everybody. Those who have been vaccinated and boosted would get exposed. Some, maybe a lot of them, will get infected, but likely, with some exceptions, do reasonably well and not having hospitalization and death. Look, he goes, the people who are unvaccinated get this, the brunt of this. I'm going to tell you guys something right now. That is not my experience. And I have more than probably 30 people that I know. Everyone, every single person who has been vaccinated and double vaccinated and even boosted who got Omicron had the exact same duration and severity of symptoms as me. And I did not get vaccinated because I did my own risk assessment, and it's my business and nobody else's business. And if anybody has a problem with it, you can write a letter to kiss@myadoublesnakes.com. I don't care. I did my own risk assessment. And I probably talked to my doctors. I am healthier and more of a germaphobe than the people criticizing me could ever hope to be. You can eat off my floors. And I have dogs. You can eat off my floors. No joke. Do you know anyone else that like wipes down their trash cans clean right like weekly? Do you know people who do this? I got my mother's neurosis for vacuuming my vacuum regularly. You know how difficult that is to do? I do it. I'm crazy. Sidebar. When we moved my oldest son into his dorm, their dorm rooms had these in-window air conditioners, and I came with like a whole batch of stuff. I have a friend who's very natural, who I make fun of this, but I do so in good spirit. She is a crystals and oils person. She's one of those. She legit, I don't even know how that works, but she keeps crystals around her, and I call her Indiana Jones and the crystal skull. So she was laughing hysterically at me over this because I had like the Clorox, but I said everything. I took apart the room. I don't care if they say they clean them. I took apart that air conditioning. I was soaking stuff in bleach. I took apart everything. Then I was like, wait a minute. I watched the other kid be moving into their room. I'm like, I need to take apart your air conditioner because you're next to my child and you could get something from this nasty air conditioner. I'm gonna have to take apart your air conditioner clean. Next thing I know, I'm cleaning everybody's. I can't deal with it. I can't deal. I'm like, I don't know you, and this is weird, but I'm gonna come in and take apart your air conditioner. Sorry. I can't. I am like that level. And I made my own risk assessment. I don't need anybody else's validation as to if I want an expert opinion, I'm gonna go ask a doctor. I'm not gonna go ask some dumbass pundit on MSNBC. I'm not going to go and listen to somebody on CNN. I'm not going to listen to a bureaucrat. I was raised to be a thinker. And really an autodidact, which is completely unappreciated, except that's ultimately what founded this country. But I digress. So this whole situation with the vaccinated, unvaccinated, etc., everybody's going to get this. And all the people that I know that had Omicron that were vaccinated or double vaxxed and boosted and everything else, we had the exact same level of for the exact same amount of time, the exact same severity of symptoms. They were no better. The idea, here's the other thing. The idea that you're going to use that argument that the vaccine, which was designed for the original strain, that without any kind of sequencing of the genome, that it's going to be applicable to any other mutation when that's never happened in medicine. Use the flu strains. Case in point, the reason some people, if they get their flu shot, still get the flu is because that's not the strain that they got. Every single time I've gotten a flu shot, I've gotten the flu. Every time. every single time I have ever in my whole life gotten the flu shot. That year I got the flu. Every time without fail. And it's because they're kind of guessing as to what's going to be the dominant strain. So my point is that why is this virus so conveniently the exception to every single known rule that we have in science reality? So if it's not designed to induce immunity for that strain, how is it used as a therapeutic? How are you using this as a way to minimize that? I don't know. I mean, I know what I know and I know what I don't. I'm not a scientist. That's why I bring on experts to answer these questions for me and you. But everybody that I know that had Omicron and they were vaxxed and boosted, they all were. I mean, I have a friend who's still sick, was on the floor for the first day. Actually, her symptoms were a little bit more severe. The only difference between us is she has a nut allergy. I don't know if that has anything to do. She's a serious allergy to peanuts. So I don't know if that has anything. But her first day was way worse than my first day. I had aches and chills, but I didn't have a fever. She was like, I don't even want to open my eyes. Light kills me. I wasn't that bad. And then, it was like a day and a half that sucked. And then it was just fatigue and some residual light headaches afterwards. For like another day, light headaches and then fatigue after that. And I'm past it. But my point is that you're being conditioned to think you're too stupid to make your own risk assessment. And if this was about really mitigating the spread, they would be consistent in their approach, consistent in their application. And there would be a lot of things that we would either A, not be doing or B, doing differently. And the masking is one of them. Do you realize the serious health impacts of, especially with adolescents, with these masks? I can't tell you how many teachers I hear from that can't say this at their jobs. They work at public schools and they can't say that. There was one of you who listens to this program who works in California and works specific and is a language specialist. So children that have language difficulties, she works with them. She works with nonverbal students. She does all of this stuff. And she's a speech therapist, but I think there's like a pathologist, something in there. And she had written was saying it makes my job impossible. It makes it impossible to do my job and work with kids. It's just crazy. It's crazy. But how are people conditioned to do all this stuff? You know, I was telling you, and let me set you up for our guest coming up at the bottom of the hour. One of the most valuable classes that I ever took, the two most valuable classes I ever took, I took logic in college. And I took every logic class you could take in college to the point where my counselor was like, are you like considering changing your major? It is math with ideas. I learned so much from that. The second class that was more helpful to me than anything was from my actual high school, Fox Senior High School in Arnold, Missouri. Mass hysteria was the class. And it was an elective. And that class actually explored how it is, like, for instance, in Germany, an entire society of people can be persuaded to support and get around somebody as awful as Hitler and do things to their fellow countrymen as awful as what was done. It explored all of that, population persuasion, everything. That is mass formation psychosis. And they're trying to say that it doesn't exist, yet it's taught as college courses, just with a different name. They're mad, though, because it is circling around and it's looking at the context of all of this with the pandemic. We're going to talk to Professor Desmet about this here coming up, Professor Desmet, and get into all of that. You don't want to miss it. We got headlines on the way, too. You have New Year's goals and need energy to tackle them. So I'd like to introduce you to a different way to start your day with Super Beats Heart Chews. Super Beats Heart Chews are a tasty treat that gives you the energy that you need and are good for you. No more afternoon coffees, energy drinks, or candy for a quick pick-me-up. Add two delicious plant-based Super Beats Heart Chews to your morning routine and promote heart-healthy energy for your day without a caffeine crash. Super Beats Heart Chews' unique, clinically researched grapeseed extract promotes heart-healthy energy and normal blood pressure as part of a healthy lifestyle. lifestyle. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats Heart Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Super Beats Heart Chews are a tasty treat that gives you the energy that you need and are good for you. Now for my listeners only, you can get up to 45% off plus free shipping at danasbeats.com. This is their best offer available anywhere. That's danasbeats.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
Oh, man, I didn't get to this Irish pub headline yesterday, and I feel really depressed about that because this is so great. This is so Irish. An Irish pub is fed up with pandemic talk, and it's called the Alt Bar, and they're fining customers for COVID chats. It's the Alt Bar in County Donegal, and if you utter a word about the virus, it's €2 in the COVID jar. You are literally fined. And the manager, Connor McDevitt, said no matter where they started talking about it, it was back to the virus. So he said he wanted to bring in an atmosphere that people were talking about common things again. He's like, nobody was chatting about the weather in Ireland anymore. That's strange. So they're fining people. I love that. That's hysterical. Walking Dead star criticizes the rise of wokeism in Hollywood casting and says roles should not solely be given to actors with quote-unquote lived experience, but considered on a case-by-case basis. You know, with talent, Lenny James said that he would challenge this idea that certain roles should be only reserved for actors with lived experiences. Like when people got mad at Bryan Cranston because he was paraplegic, playing a paraplegic. You've got to watch Bill Burr on that, by the way. And Lenny James, he's Morgan from Walking Dead. I love Morgan. And so if they come at Morgan, I will come at you. So you leave him alone. Also, let's see, a couple other things. Snoop Dogg is going to be selling Snoop Dogs, like actual hot dogs. That, I don't know how I feel about this. Is it ironic or is it corny? There's a fine line, you know what I mean? There's a fine line, dude. This headline, I didn't think it was real. Kane sent this headline to me and I actually looked it up because I was like, there's no way that this is a real, but it is. A transplant surgeon used an electric beam to burn his initials into patients' organs. He monogrammed them and he just lost his medical license. Simon Bramhall, and when you see him, he looks like a part of the ensemble from Inside Number 9, which is a British dark comedy series. His name is Simon Bramhall. He finished transplanting the liver inside his patient in 2013 before he went back in with a final flourish. He used an electric beam to burn the letters S and B into the organ he just put in the patient. And then another surgeon, when they were doing an operation, found the initials when the organ failed a week later. So the guy lost his medical license, and it's been going like back and forth for a long time. He got convicted of assault in 2017 and fined. What is wrong with your mental everything when you're monogramming the organs of patients as you're like doing transplants? That's so bizarre. So coming up, Professor Matthias Desmet, he joins us to talk about mass formation psychosis and why it's to explain so many people giving up their rights in this pandemic. Stay with us.
Your one-stop shop for the information you need to fight back. If you're gonna have to learn stuff, you might as well enjoy it. The Dana Show.
I think in many respects, Omicron, with its extraordinary, unprecedented degree of efficiency of transmissibility, will ultimately find just about everybody. Unfortunately, those who are still unvaccinated are going to get the brunt of the severe aspect of this.
So, well, we've talked a little bit about this. I'm recovered from Omicron, and when I was comparing my conditions to that of friends who had been vaxxed, double vaxxed, boosted, etc. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here. Good to be with you all. And we've been having this conversation about the, not just here in the United States, but internationally, worldwide, this response to these controls, these suggestions, these regulations, enforcement by governments around the world to this and trying to acclimate people to live with this pandemic response. And our concern, and Kane and I have talked about this incessantly, you know, one of my biggest criticisms, I have many, just very simply, there's no consistency, and there, where's the evidence? If we're going to do something, it should be based on science. It should be based on medicine, two areas which should not be ever politicized. And it doesn't seem to be that. And we see this with, you know, the president here, the whole thing with the mask mandate, everything else. What, based on what? Based on what evidence? Instead, all we hear is, well, someone could die. The fatalities. I mean, there's so many fatalities. Yet you have to, the mask is going to save lives. He literally said this. We played the soundbite. And so people have all of this anxiety about, they're terrified. They talk about it on social media, which I think they spread anxiety by talking about their anxiety. And it reminded me of this elective that I took in high school, mass hysteria. And I was thinking about this when I was reading all of the criticisms of my next guest, because mass formation psychosis, we've had Dr. Robert Malone on the program, and he referenced Professor Matthias Desmet and mass formation psychosis. And it sounded very familiar to me, some parts of this, what I actually learned in school before school and education got so politicized. And how can you get giant segments of people to relinquish their bodily autonomy, to relinquish their rights without firing a single shot? And it's because of this. And I wanted to bring on Professor Desmet, Matthias Desmet. As you know, he's a world renowned, and everyone hates him right now. Not everyone, but anti-thinkers, I think, really dislike him. He has a very interesting background with clinical psychiatry and as a statistician as well. And he is teaches at University of Ghent in Belgium. And Professor, it's so good to have you. I've been really looking forward to this. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Dana.
Of course. I want to get your response to this, because I just, like, for instance, here just in the United States in the past week, there's been this huge push for, you know, masking. And this has all been predicated upon, well, because it's going to save lives. There's going to be so many fatalities if people don't do this. And of course, this is year two into this pandemic, which, you know, raises questions as to why they're saying this now with N95 masks. But I wanted to get your thoughts, because this comes back to what you've been discussing quite a bit, mass formation psychosis, and having people unify around a particular variable. And they think that they're doing something very courageously. They're being very gallant. They're all banding together to fight this common enemy. But is it really based on actual fact and science? And are we using the best approach? Or is this just really a tactic to make it easier to control people?
Well, if it is really an intentionally developed tactic to control people, that's something that goes beyond my expertise. But what is definitely true is that when a process of mass formation emerges in a society, it becomes easier to control the people. That's for sure. And I truly believe that such a process has been going on.
Yes. In our society. You've said that there are four basic conditions for a society to become vulnerable when talking about mass psychosis, mass hypnosis, that there are four basic conditions which must be met. And I know one of those was lack of any kind of bonding in society. Because there are so many different groups, everyone's taught to sort of react to a different offense with every other group. Talk to us a little bit about these four steps, beginning with that lack of unity, that lack of societal bonding.
Yes, lack of social bond is the most crucial condition that has to be fulfilled in order for mass formation to emerge. And it was definitely fulfilled in the years before the corona crisis. For instance, the U.S. Surgeon General mentioned that there was a loneliness epidemic in the States. And in the U.K., Theresa May appointed a minister of loneliness because she acknowledged that the extent of the problem. So that's always the most crucial condition. Many people have to feel socially isolated. The more people feel socially isolated, the more intense the processes of mass formation become. And then from this condition follows a second one: a lack of meaning-making and sense-making. When people feel socially isolated, being really social beings, people are social beings, and if they feel socially isolated, they will usually experience a lack of meaning-making and a lack of sense-making in life. They will start to wonder what they live for. And then, from these two conditions, follows a third one, which is high levels of so-called free-floating anxiety. Free-floating anxiety is a kind of anxiety that is not connected to a mental representation. That means that people feel anxious without knowing what they feel anxious for. In contrast with, if people feel anxious for, let's say, a dangerous animal, a dangerous dog, they know what they are anxious for, and they can control that anxiety by developing a strategy to escape from the object of anxiety. But if you don't know what you feel anxious for, you cannot control it. You cannot control that anxiety. And then, from the first three conditions, follows the last one, which is high levels of free-floating frustration and aggression. So people, when they feel socially isolated, feel a lack of meaning-making, feel constantly anxious without knowing what they feel anxious for, will get frustrated and aggressive without knowing what they feel frustrated and aggressive for. These are the four basic conditions. If a population, if a society is in this kind of state, then it becomes vulnerable for mass formation. And we can see this from historical examples, such as the large-scale mass formations in the Soviet Union, just before the rise of the Soviet Union and just before the rise of Nazi Germany. Then these four conditions were met, and then this large-scale mass formation happened.
And we're seeing that. We're really seeing that now with all of this with the pandemic and the regulations and government responses. We're talking to Professor Matthias Desmet on mass formation psychosis. I've seen so many headlines, Professor, trying to delegitimize what you're discussing and what other people have referenced with this. They say it's junk science or that it's made up, which I'm not, for me, I don't know how they can make these allegations, because we see it all throughout history, whatever they want to call it. We've seen this play out concretely throughout history. What do you say to those detractors and those critics who are trying to just ignore this?
Yes, I believe it's absurd to say even that mass formation does not exist as an academic term or as a theoretical term, because it simply refers to the process through which a mass forms, to which a mass emerges in society. So it's absurd, and it has been studied since 200 years by major scholars such as Le Bon, Gustave Le Bon, McDougall, Canetti, Hannah Arendt, and then also by experimental psychologists such as Ash and Sharif. So I would not know why such a term would not exist, or why a phenomenon would not exist. Of course it exists.
Exactly.
And it's very difficult. The logic of the process is very clear, because once these four conditions are met and a narrative is distributed in society which indicates an object of anxiety and provides a strategy to deal with the object of anxiety, then all this free-floating anxiety couples to the object of anxiety in the narrative. And there is a huge willingness in the population to participate in the strategy to deal with the object of anxiety. So people all together start a heroic battle with the object of anxiety. And in this way, they are able to mentally control their anxiety. And at the same time, a new kind of social bond emerges. It's a collective heroic battle. And this new social bond, is the real reason why people buy into the narrative, because it leads to the social bond, not because the narrative is correct or right. It's just because it leads to the social bond. And that explains why, even when the narrative becomes utterly absurd and blatantly wrong, people continue to buy into it. People continue to go along with it, because it leads to this new solidarity, this new citizenship. We can even say more, the more absurd the measures become and the narrative becomes, the more a certain part of the population, it's rather small, 25-30% usually, the more this part of the population will applaud it, simply because the corona measures actually become a kind of rituals through which the individual shows that the collective, the solidarity, is more important than its individual interests. And that's what ritualistic behavior is. A ritual is a kind of behavior which has no pragmatic meaning, and through which the individual sacrifices a part of its individual interests for the sake of the group. So that's the psychological function for a certain part of the population of the corona measures. And that explains why, no matter how absurd the measures and the narrative become, people continue to buy into it.
and why they still do so, even in the face of hard fact. We're talking with Dr. Matthias Desmet on mass formation psychosis, because this was something that you've had conversations before, for instance, about the fatality rates as it relates to the pandemic, before there had even been massive widespread testing on a wide scale. We were already determining fatality rates, and that was being used. People were so terrified of this. And then, as you were mentioning, the response, they all wanted to unite to fight this one common enemy. But what was it based up on? It kind of reminds me of this hurt and rescue tactic. Here you have, you're causing the pain and then also providing the solution for it as a method of control. But before there had been widespread testing done, people were trying to determine fatality rates, but I'm not quite sure how you can have ever even made that calculation without doing the necessary math in order to even get to it. It didn't make any sense. It was the cart before the horse. And so that goes along as an example of what you're saying with the pandemic.
Yes. In the beginning of the pandemic, from the first week on, I started to study, because as you said, I also got a master in statistics. And they started to study the figures and the graphs and the statistics and the mathematical models that were used. And they noticed immediately that they dramatically overrated the dangerousness of the virus. That was something that they used, that they noticed immediately. And all the mathematical models, the counting of the contaminations and stuff, and then also the basic statistics like the infection fatality rate, I always noticed that there was a tendency to dramatically overrate the dangerousness of the virus. And there was also something else. From the beginning, there was no proper cost-benefit analysis. It was as if the collateral damage caused by the measures was not taken into account. And while this is the most basic consideration you would want to make, like, will the remedy not be worse than the disease? And in one way or another, not only the experts, but also a major part of the population didn't seem to notice that there could be a huge collateral damage, which very probably would be worse than the damage that could be claimed by the virus. So when this, it was then that I started to think, what is there going on in society that something like this can happen? And that I think it's perfectly explained by the process of mass formation, which always leads to this narrowing of the field of attention, which makes that only one type of danger is still considered, and which makes that this specific threat is highly overrated and highly dramatically overestimated. So that was, for me, that was the beginning, the observation, right, that the numbers and the figures in one way or another distorted reality.
Yeah. Talking with Professor Desmet, you had made mention before of how this is really this has been used before with the different issues, whether it's been we're talking about totalitarian governments, but also you gave the example in a previous discussion about climate. But this issue with the pandemic, the reason you were suggesting that it's more successful in using this virus as opposed to climate is because it can be so easily personalized. The death of a loved one, it's much more, people can actually envision this, and it's more terrifying. It induces more anxiety.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And yes, absolutely. And you cannot only be blamed for your own death, but also for the death of someone else. And that makes that I think that this narrative about the virus was so successful and had such a psychological grip on the population. Yes, and of course it's an invisible enemy. It's a very good object of anxiety, a virus, I believe.
Yes. Well, last question for you, and we're talking with Professor Matthias Desmet, who is the godfather of the mass formation psychosis theory, for the lack of a better way to put it, and really educating people on this, which is, I really appreciate your first U.S. Broadcast interview with us. So here's the big question. We are recognizing what is happening with mass formation psychosis, but how is there a way to disrupt that process?
Yes. There is a way to disrupt this process, I believe. Maybe not immediately, but, you know, mass formation brings people in a state that is identical to hypnosis. And hypnosis is a phenomenon, is a mental state that is provoked by the voice of someone. That's why totalitarian leaders, and the totalitarian state is always based on mass formation, and that makes it radically different from, let's say, a classical dictatorship. You cannot compare the two, actually. Right. So, and that's why, because totalitarian leaders always start the day with half an hour of propaganda, because they know that the state of the population that is needed in order to be in control is provoked by the voice of a leader or an expert or no matter what. And as soon as you understand that, you also understand that if you want to make the hypnosis less deep, then there has to be a dissonant voice in public space. So the most important thing we can do is to continue to speak out. That's the most important thing we can do, because if we continue to speak out, the hypnosis, we won't be able to wake up the people who are in the process of mass formation immediately. And again, this is only a minor part of the population. It's only about 25 to 30%, but then there is an additional 40 to 60% who just goes along with the masses, while they know that there is something absurd in the narrative.
And this is why the dissidents are very, that's why they're suppressed and why they're attacking you. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I so appreciate it. Dr. Matthias Desmet on mass formation psychosis, thank you so much for speaking out on this.
As you talked about a year ago and working with Republicans, now he is talking about Republicans that don't agree with voting rights. He's describing them as George Wallace, Bull Connor, and Jefferson Davis. What happened to the guy who, when he was elected, said, to make progress, we must stop treating our opponents as our enemy?
I think everybody listening to that speech who's speaking on the level, as my mother would say, would note that he was not comparing them as humans. He was comparing the choice to those figures in history and where they're going to position themselves as they determine whether they're going to support the fundamental right to vote or not.
No, I'm pretty sure that it was, he was calling everybody racist. That's exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. DanaLash.com. So good to be with you this Friday. And that was Jen Psaki, obviously, who is addressing Peter Ducey's question during the real life edition of Ducey Time. There was a really good piece that I was reading by Amber Athey over at Spectator. And she was discussing that exact thing, this, which was a really widely condemned speech. And one of the most ignorant speeches I've heard from any kind of president ever. He even went further than Barack Obama, using the phrase domestic enemies. Barack Obama just used enemies. He used it one time. Biden's been using it all over the country. Psaki keeps saying, well, you know, I know that there's claims about the offensive nature of the speech, but that's hilarious because what about Trump? What about? That's actual whataboutism. Because it's excusing Biden's, it's not only excusing Biden's in ridiculousness and rudeness, but it's justifying it because they're trying to argue but Trump. Here's the difference, though, that the Spectator piece makes. When Trump would take to Twitter, and when he would criticize people, this is what Athey writes. Quote, yes, Trump had an itchy Twitter finger, but his attacks were on politicians, celebrities, and corrupt institutions, i.e. the elites. Biden's offense is that he, as the commander-in-chief, punches down on the citizenry. His hate flows directly to the American voter. That is the difference. And that is true. You can say whatever you want about however nasty you thought Trump was to a particular celebrity or another politician, but the one thing that sets him apart from Biden in terms of who they're targeting is that Trump didn't go out and bash voters. He was talking about the people who are part of the system. Biden talks about voters. That's the big thing. He's grown less likable as he ages. And so that's this idea that he's trying to appeal to someone's good nature, but you're not using good nature to do so, nor are you doing anything that's even remotely accurate. They're not relying on fact. They confirmed they left 50 million COVID tests sitting in a warehouse. I was telling you about Rhode Island, super highly vaxxed Rhode Island yesterday. You've got, there's no consistency. And then with the filibuster stuff, which is what all of this has been hinged on, it's why he went down to Atlanta. Devil went down to Georgia, I guess. We had an attack on the filibuster. Democrats saying it's racist, it's Jim Crow. Can't believe we got to do away with the filibuster, which they're going to change their tune on right after they lose the majority in the House after midterms, by the way, 18 months. Actually, they kind of changed their tune on it yesterday. Because you thought the big show was Tom Cotton on the Senate floor reading Chuck Schumer's old comments in defense of the filibuster. We've talked quite a bit about Nord Stream 2, that pipeline that's going to take away Ukraine's status as a transit entity and remove them as part of Russia's energy infrastructure because of the pipeline that they had, the original pipeline. Nord Stream 2, between Russia and Germany, this was just kind of given freely to Putin by Biden. Now, the construction was about 96% complete already when Trump got into office and he stopped it, put sanctions on. Now all of that's been undone under Joe Biden, who also wants everyone to simultaneously believe that he's incredibly tough on Russia. I thought that Trump was supposed to be the Russian pawn, but apparently Biden gives them the pipeline. Now, this bill that was proposed, Ted Cruz proposed this bill that's going to sanction any and all companies connected to the new Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And he was actually, believe it or not, joined by Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer actually agreed with him. But what's weird is that Schumer has been spending all week demanding that the Senate go back to simple majority rule, which under that rule, by the way, Cruz's bill would pass. Senators voted 55-44 on Cruz's legislation. They didn't meet the 60-vote threshold needed to pass. But what gets me in all of this is that they employed the filibuster in order to fight against Cruz's bill. That was so fascinating to me. It was 7 hours after the opening vote. Democrats were filibustering it. The bill got 55 votes, needed 60 to pass. Democrats spent 7 hours filibustering this. Wait, what? They filibustered a bill this week for 7 hours while saying that the filibuster was racist Jim Crow. And it happened to literally be a Republican bill that was about sanctioning Putin. And they were against sanctioning Putin, and they used their so-called racist Jim Crow filibuster to block it. There's only three things that are certain in life, not two: death, taxes, and Democrat inconsistency. Wow. Oh, and by the way, while it affects NATO, today they've been out trying to blast Trump on NATO, which is hysterical. So that's really just chef's kiss right here. And they had 55 votes. That was enough for cloture, at least in a filibuster, a Senate that doesn't have filibuster. This is crazy. What horrible messaging What horrible optics. My goodness. Now, also on messaging, this is what I don't understand. Hospitals in California, remember, they've sent everybody home. They had the vax fight with our first responders. And now, the headline coming from California is they're telling medical workers who are virus positive to stay on the job. Because they have nobody. Wait a day in the emergency room. No one's answering phones. Patients are coming in. So they're trying to address this staffing shortage, a hurt and rescue that they've created. And now they're saying, well, if you're positive, go ahead and go to work. So what? So is it still can you still say it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated? This is just crazy. Now there's a big argument over contagiousness with symptomatic, asymptomatic, just nuts. Zero consistency. Zero consistency. So here's another thing. Two other things I want to make sure that we get to. First thing, this has to do, actually I have three. Because coming up, we're going to talk with Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt on the CMS, one of the two mandates that SCOTUS was looking at yesterday. Or they made the decision on yesterday. First, a Yale law graduate and founder of far-right Oath Keepers is charged along with 10 others with seditious conspiracy. By the way, when you don't have proof that someone did something, you charge them with conspiracy to do it. And then you just wait for the court to sort it out. Just FYI. The guy faces 20 years in prison for organizing the January 6th riot, instructing his members from outside the Capitol building. So I was looking at this because they're going after these Oath Keepers. Do you know what it sounds like? Because you know who else was apparently an Oath Keeper? Ray Epps. You know what it sounds like? Ray Epps is an informant. Because he was named and then wasn't named anymore. This dude, that Ray Epps dude, sounds like an informant. Huh. The committee also subpoenaed all social media about the spread of misinformation and extremism. Now, the other headline to get into, this is what we were just talking about Russia a minute ago. Europe is now saying, or Poland is among the NATO members that are very hawkish, obviously, but they're saying that Europe is at greatest risk of war in 30 years because of Russia's revisionist ambitions in Eastern Europe. So they are warning. I don't think that alone Russia can risk anything. That's why I always think, is there going to be like a Russia-Chinese kind of, you know, split? I don't know. But they said that 57 members of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, they didn't name them by name and didn't scream out Vladimir Putin, but they listed all these things in which Moscow's involvement, which Moscow's been involved. And they're saying that it looks like the risk of war in the OSCE, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, is now greater than ever before in the last 30 years. Russia deployed 100,000 more troops near its borders with Ukraine. And this is after they annexed the Crimea region from Ukraine in 2014. And then the last thing to touch on in our segment here, accidents are now racist. So we heard about the horrible, horrible fire that was in the Bronx, right? Deadly fires in Bronx and in Philly. These high rises and these deadly fires. And there's this piece over at NBC that says, you know, it's poor residential conditions and racism rife in the nation's urban planning and infrastructure decisions. So they're talking about how these accidents were really the consequence of racism. Here's what's interesting. If I wanted to be a total brat, I could say, I agree with you. And here's why. How did this urban structure come to be in modern day America as we know it? You could go back to LBJ's Great Society. What party was that, Kane?
A Democrat.
Yeah. LBJ's Great Society. What was a feature of the or a bug, you could say? What was part of the Great Society? Urban renewal.
Yeah.
Destroying historically black communities and resituating everyone. Urban renewal. So there's your racism. Coming up, we're going to talk with Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, because he was part of that 10-state coalition involved with the CMS mandate. That was the any health facility that was getting Medicaid, Medicare dollars. The way that the Supreme Court decided it is that that mandate can stand, but not OSHA's for private businesses. We're going to talk to him about that, so you don't want to miss.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby was indicted on federal charges that she lied on loan and mortgage documents, according to the Baltimore Sun. A federal grand jury has indicted Baltimore's top prosecutor on charges of perjury and making false statements with a series of financial transactions that helped her buy a condo on Florida's Gulf Coast. You know, I thought Democrats hated, by the way. I thought they all hated Florida. And some other property near Orlando. Mosby is charged with falsely claiming to suffer financial hardship from the coronavirus to obtain an early withdrawal from her retirement savings to purchase the homes. And prosecutors say she lied on her mortgage loan application by hiding her outstanding federal tax debt. Oh, the people who watches the watchman. There you go. Good heavens. Also, rainy days are apparently bad for the economy. Somebody paid for this as a study. This is from Germany. It's the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. Productivity that goes down when the rainy days are here. Oh my gosh. You know what? I did a study too when I was like five. It's called Rain, Rain, Go Away. It's my study. I can't believe people do this. Like they actually study this. People behave more sadistically when they are bored. I'm not surprised by this either. Just somebody, again, something else that somebody, they said that people are sadistic when they want to harm other people because it's entertaining to them. They said that it's often viewed as a dark personality trait along with narcissism. But they said that, they said that bored people will give themselves electric shocks to alleviate under stimulation. That's what they did. It sounds like a Ghostbusters test. Yeah, that would be something that would go along with it. A woman was jailed after she created up to 30 fake Instagram profiles to incriminate her innocent ex-boyfriend. Hey. I'm telling you, I saw this chick, Courtney Ireland Ainsworth. I saw a photo. She got crazy eyes. Yeah. Dudes, if you want to know if a chick is crazy, show me a picture. I'll tell you if girl's crazy, right? They have this look. She apparently was accusing her Louis Jolly. She was accusing her former partner of threatening to stab her, and she said that he was harassing and stalking her. He got arrested 6 times because of the stuff that she did to him. And so now she's in trouble. Throw this broad in the pokey. Crazy. So coming up, we're going to talk to Missouri AG Eric Schmidt. He was one of those part of the 10-state coalition on that CMS mandate. That was the one that actually is that stayed. We're going to talk to him about that next.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's chapter and verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at danalash.com.
The Supreme Court's decision on the OSHA mandate essentially means that in this pandemic, it is up to individual employers to determine whether their workplaces will be safe for employees and whether their businesses will be safe for consumers. So President Biden, you'll see this in his statement, will be calling on and will continue to call on businesses to immediately join those who have already stepped up, including one-third of Fortune 100 mm-hmm. companies, to institute vaccination requirements to protect their workers, customers, and communities.
That's Jen Psaki, the White House press spokes, who's saying that, discussing Biden and those mandates, as the Supreme Court made a decision on yesterday. It's kind of a mixed bag, but it's a pretty big loss, though, for Biden when you look at the decision involving the OSHA mandates. Welcome back. Dana Lash here. Happy Friday to you. Sign up for Chapter and Verse, my Substack, because I went through this mixed bag of decisions, and you can access that through danalash.com. I was very frustrated, though, with the arguments through the OSHA because I don't want perfect to be the enemy of good, but is it that ridiculous for the lawyers, for these petitioners to prioritize the lack of any kind of statutory authority to expand government to get involved in private businesses like this. And as it relates to the CMS mandate, and this was a coalition of states involving my next guest, in which the court actually stayed that mandate, where if it's a health facility that's getting Medicare or Medicaid funding, I mean, it comes down to the Benjamins. There are conditions that go with government taxpayer money, and the condition is this fax mandate. That's what they determine. But I'm not happy with that either. I mean, it's crazy. I wanted to bring in Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt on this because he was involved in this. Missouri was one of the states, part of that coalition. He's been on the program to talk about this before. General, it's good to thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate you giving us some time today. And I wanted to get your initial on the CMS mandate. I wanted to get your takeaway because I look at it like this. And again, I'm not an attorney, but it seems inconsistent to me. If the court is going to say, well, it's not really a workplace hazard and it's beyond OSHA's authority to mandate this in a private business, but yet somehow the presence of taxpayer money changes that variable. I mean, I don't know. What is your take on the CMS decision? And obviously you weren't happy with it.
Right. Well, first of all, let me just say on the OSHA mandate, because Missouri was the first state to file suit. Yes. On both of those, actually. That's a big win in the sense that there's no statutory authority at all anywhere. There's no constitutional authority for OSHA, which is charged with, you know, making sure forklifts beep when they back up or there's a shower next to a chemical station. Right. To force a medical procedure on 80 million Americans. It's like fitting an elephant into a mouse hole, right? It just doesn't work. It doesn't fit. I'm glad the court ruled that way. I think it's an important decision. Maybe one of the most consequential in generations as it relates to administrative law. So that's a big win for workers. It's a big win.
Let me ask you about that though. Not to interrupt, you're talking Missouri. Sure. Attorney General Eric Schmidt. He was involved at Missouri as part of the coalition of states in both of these cases. I know. I might be petty here, and I realize that you don't want perfect to be the enemy of good, but I was reading the transcript of the court arguments. And it was just, I was disappointed in seeing the emphasis not on what we were just talking about. There's no authority for the government to do any of this. I mean, is it beyond the realm of possibility to have lawyers for petitioners go in and make this huge defense of separation of powers and private, the rights of private businesses? Because they never actually addressed the constitutionality of it, you know, head on as tip of the spear. It was more or less, you know, they OSHA doesn't have the ability to do this. What is your thought?
Yeah, so I think what's important to know is with oral arguments in front of the court, and it's kind of unusual. These were technically stay motions, which not on the merits necessarily, but stay. Right. Motions. It's hard sometimes with oral arguments. It's not a full flavor of the case. So the briefing that's submitted before oral arguments has all of that stuff laid out. The oral arguments are kind of like, what are the justices talking about? And it's actually kind of hard to predict sometimes, based on the questions they're asked, what they're going to do. And Clarence Thomas, before actually the last couple of terms, was famously didn't ask a lot of questions, right? And so, and he's, you know, started in the Missouri Attorney General's office, very proud of Clarence Thomas, Justice Thomas. But it's hard to, with oral arguments, get a sense because, you know, another thing that was certainly noted in the briefing, but doesn't come to light in the old arguments, this conversation about, from the liberal justices, about, you know, this being a crisis and transmission. And what we know now is people who've been vaccinated can transmit the virus. But I think it's in Justice Sotomayor now famously, you know, sort of misstated a lot of facts about the extent to which COVID has impacted people currently. And I think it's, by the way, part and parcel of the corporate media fear-mongering for 2.5 years. On all these particular points, we still see it now. I mean, if you are a child, you know, they use this as an impetus for forced masking, you're still more likely, way more likely, to drown or be struck by lightning than to die of COVID. You don't hear that on the nightly news, though, because it doesn't fit the narrative. So I think sometimes it's hard to get a sense from oral argument what the full briefing is. And all those issues were addressed. I don't think there's any constitutional authority for this. Federal government is supposed to be of limited powers. Forcing vaccines isn't one of them. Now, on the CMS mandate, to get to your question, I would argue it's a little more narrow of an opinion. It was 5-4, not 6-3. And the important, I think, thing for your listeners to know is that fight isn't over. They sent that back essentially to the Eighth Circuit, and we are going to vigorously fight that. And more fully brief a lot of the issues, because Justice Kagan mentioned this too. She doesn't know a lot. She said that they don't know a lot about rural America. Well, I can tell you, in flyover country here in Missouri, in the heartland, in rural Missouri, hospitals are going to close. Nursing homes are going to close. That patient with dementia, somebody's dad, somebody's grandfather, somebody's brother, is going to get moved to a facility hundreds of miles away, an unfamiliar setting. That individual that needs a heart procedure or an emergency procedure is going to have to travel tens, if not hundreds of miles further away, because you're just going to have, you think you got a workforce issue now. It's only going to be exacerbated by this. So I think as we are able to more fully brief this at the Eighth Circuit on an expedited or accelerated level, we're going to get another crack at this thing. So it's not over. The fight's not over. We are not throwing in the towel on this. I think it's an issue, that big, important issue that still remains.
And we're talking with Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt on these Supreme Court decisions as it relates to Biden's vaccine mandates. And I think this applies to the CMS mandate as well as OSHA, because one of the, I know when reading the opinion, it was touched upon that, you know, not in these exact terms, but where does one draw the line? I mean, if you're making a mandate for this specific virus, well, my goodness, I mean, there's the flu, there's strep throat, there's all kinds of stuff, including things for which there, I mean, there's a number of different issues. So, I mean, maybe it's a little bit easier to say, where do you draw that line with the OSHA mandate? But for CMS, the CMS mandate as well, I mean, where do you draw that line? Because if it's going to be this government controlling, you know, putting a needle in someone's arm for this virus, well, what about everything else? I mean, I think that applies in that case, too.
Yeah, and I think that I don't agree with this, but what the liberal justices joined by Kavanaugh and Roberts agreed was that, and I don't agree with this, but that the spending provision was the hook on CMS. But that,
yeah.
Look, by the way, that ought to be a cautionary tale for how small you want the federal government to be, because if that is the test, which, by the way, in part going back to Obamacare, they allowed states to not expand Medicaid even though there was a spending provision. So there's some inconsistency there that, again, I think we can further flesh out. There's no statutory authority for this. They were referring to some vague health and safety, one out of several that deal with CMS. So again, this fight is not over. But I also think, Dana, an important point to make, even though it's a big win on the OSHA mandate, which was broader in scope, but I still don't think healthcare workers should have to check their constitutional rights to go to work. They shouldn't have to have a medical procedure to keep their job. I mean, this is nuts, but you watch. I don't think this is over as far as administrative actions taken by the Biden administration. He's been dealt two big defeats now in Build Back Broke and federalizing the elections. And I think they're going to put this in high, you know, what is it in Spaceballs? I guess this is me being a Gen Xer. What is it? Ludicrous speed. You know, it's like he's going ludicrous speed on these administrative actions to get around Congress. A workaround, as the justices were actually calling it, a workaround. And you watch, mark my words, another thing that's coming is climate change. This is an existential threat. We're at a tipping point. We've got to do something now. And they're going to move the Green New Deal through administrative action. You watch, there's a midterm variant. There's a midterm variant coming. You watch, and it'll be with elections. But know this. The Republican attorneys general in Missouri will be right in the lead. We're going to stop all this. We're going to continue to fight. We're not going to, this is, to me, this is about who we are as a country. We believe in this experiment of self-government. We believe in individual rights. We believe that people should be able to chart their own course. And all that's on the line here, all of it, and why these cases are so important and why we're not backing down.
I agree. Talking to Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, last question for you. This is on something a little bit more specific to Missouri. The Second Amendment Preservation Act that the state passed, and I read this piece because everyone likes to say, well, police chiefs are backing this lawsuit over the Second Amendment Preservation Act. And of course, chiefs are the ones that are politically appointed by mayors more often than not. They're Democrat, and they're not held accountable to the public in the same way that sheriffs are. But I've seen criticisms of this. The way I view the Second Amendment Preservation Act for that state, and there have been a number of states around the country that have implemented something kind of similar, either more locally within their own town or city, or more broadly as a county. But I mean, this is basically just to stop commandeering and to protect 10th Amendment rights so that the federal government can't force the state to implement something that the federal government doesn't want to staff or give any resources for, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And I am defending that Second Amendment Preservation Act in court, and will continue to do so. It doesn't matter who's going to be challenging it, whether it's Department of Justice or, you know, local mayors like Tashara Jones, who, you know, presides over the murder capital of the United States in St. Louis, you know, and is more concerned about forcing the masking of five-year-olds than dealing with that. But so we're going to get defended against all comers. I've been a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, voted for constitutional carry in Missouri. And the Second Amendment Preservation Act, the way I describe it to people is, look, we can defend the Second Amendment, people's God-given right to defend themselves through the Second Amendment, that's protected by the Second Amendment, and fight violent crime. We can do both things at the same time. This either-or proposition that some people are trying to use to divide folks isn't going to work, and I think we'll be successful in defending that law in court.
There you go. Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, always appreciate your time, sir. Thank you so much, and have a great weekend.
Great to be with you, Dana.
Shooting down woke culture, one crazy headline at a time. It's The Dana Show.
It's NFTs for $50. And so, like, when you think about the concept of digital scarcity and things that are, you know, they can't be copied.
That are easily reproduced.
Well, but they're not the same.
That is my favorite audio soundbite right now. That's Keanu Reeves. He's with Carrie Ann Moss, and they're talking to this media outlet about NFTs, because they did, which are non-fungible tokens. And they did NFTs as part of this push for the promo for the new Matrix. And that was him laughing like a loon when he said that. That was hysterical. I laughed out loud. I was, because we had this huge bust up discussion. We always have debates at our dinner table, and we were arguing about NFTs. And so my youngest son and I are on the same page, and Chris is totally opposite us. And he's like sitting here trying to argue for the merits. And my youngest is like, but you can just copy it. And he's like, and you can do the serial and all this stuff. And he was like going on and on and on and on. And it was just, it's funny. And I tend to, because I'm like, I don't know if I believe in the, you can get mad at me whatsoever. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around this idea of digital scarcity. I mean, digital scarcity, I can copy, I can control V something. You know what I mean?
No, that's true. But it has to do with the blockchain. And obviously, we'll get into that at a later
but
time.
Isn't that just, it's entirely arbitrary.
Yeah.
This is why I hate fiat currency. It's entirely arbitrary. I like something that is actually like you can reach out and touch it, you know?
Right. No, like I'm with
fun,
you on that.
Like, yeah, real, like actual physical, like gold standard, right?
Yeah.
I'm telling, I don't know. I just, so we had this huge discussion about this, but I loved this clip. That was him laughing like a loon. That was Keanu Reeves laughing like a loon when they asked him. He was like, hee 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 hee. Clearly, he's got some thoughts on NFTs. But the other best part of it was the guy who was asking the question did not expect Keanu Reeves to have that reaction. And the guy's face, he was so crestfallen. It just, he just looked like somebody popped his balloon or he dropped his ice cream on the pavement.
He thought he'd agree. He thought Keanu would agree with him.
Oh, it was so funny. I was rolling. It was so funny. But yeah, that's Keanu Reeves. There isn't a bad take. He doesn't have a bad take. He's like everybody's friend. Even if you disagree with them on this, the way that he laughed about it is hysterical. So make sure you sign up for that newsletter, Chapter and Verse. I got a lot of good stuff up there for you. And we already have an excerpt of the interview that I did. We just had, as you know, Professor Matthias Desmond on. I was telling Kate, it's so hard to say his last name because we come from our hometown. There's a high school that was like really good at soccer, and it was called Desmet. And so it's really, really hard to
spelled
say.
Spelled the same, but sounds different.
Spelled exactly the same. And so when you grow up, you know, when you have like certain rivalries with areas and all of that, and that's all you hear. Yeah, it's like very, so yeah, Desmet. It's just very, yeah, very interesting to say his name. Anyway, we got that excerpt up, and the full video will be up on YouTube, Facebook, elsewhere. Kane, today in stupidity.
All right, it would be Nancy Pelosi.
Pelosi's
on the pill.
Right.
Anyway, she was talking about Biden's speech and how, you know, racially charged it was. But she says, you know, it's fine because nobody knows who Bull Connor is. Listen to this.
The only criticism I would make, too, I wouldn't say they're criticisms and observations. Nobody knows who Bull Connor is. And if we're making the case to say we're going to be with Martin Luther King or Bull Connor, who's that? We'll be with Martin Luther King or the peak Martin Luther King and John Lewis. or the people who unleashed the fierce dogs on them.
Oh, good
That's
God.
Well, you guys said his name enough, and, like, yeah. you know, he's one of y'all, so I just, you know. It's kind of like what remembering the bad guy's name is makes you bad. That's killed by association, and that's cheap, lazy logic.
Yeah, and it also points to what they think about the intelligence level of the average American.
Why are her eyebrows, like, way up there?
I don't know. I thought she... Did she paint them up there?
I don't know.
They weren't threaded up there, were they? No.
Can you thread that? You have to have a hairy forehead if you're going to be threading your eyebrows up that high.
That was... She always looks like she's surprised by something.
I don't know. It's like they're two frowny mouths. Way up there. I'm not being mean. You all are thinking it. I just have the breath to say it. There you go. How about that? Folks, have a great weekend. Make sure you get the newsletter. I'll be back with you behind the mic on Monday.